You're listening to The Point. According to the National Institute of Mental Health, nearly one-third of adolescents are affected by anxiety disorder. Not only is that number on the rise, the severity of the anxiety is also increasing. The new movie, Angst, Raising Awareness Around Anxiety, hopes to bring awareness and break the stigma for young people navigating mental health concerns, specifically anxiety. This will be screened in Falmouth and Harwich this week and next week. Joining us to discuss anxiety in adolescence as well as supports and services to help them is Fiona Jensen from Calmer Choice. Good morning, Fiona.
Hello.
Sheila House from Harwich Youth and Family Services.
Welcome. Good morning.
And Stephanie Briotti from Behavioral Health Innovators.
Good morning.
All right. Anxiety is something we've all experienced at one time or another. Can you explain how anxiety disorder or overwhelming anxiety is different from occasional anxiety? Who wants to take that on? Sheila?
I'll take that one. So anxiety, is like any kind of mental health issue, is always on a spectrum. I sort of like using a horizontal line. So there's mild anxiety over things like flying, public speaking, in my case, major anxiety. and then there's the kind of anxiety that really interferes with a person's quality of life, no matter what age they are. So it pops up socially, academically, at work, you know. And that's when, you know, somebody might want to seek counseling so that they can improve their quality of life.
Yeah. Okay, sometimes, and with anxiety, you can rationally know, hey, this is silly. Intellectually, you know that you shouldn't be feeling it, but your body is feeling it, and you mm-hmm. can't control it sometimes. I mean, it's overwhelming.
Yeah.
And you feel kind of helpless and really frustrated by that.
Right, and very alone. There's always a, when people are experiencing high levels of anxiety and panic attacks, they very often say, I can't imagine anybody else feeling the way that I'm feeling right now. So, and the opposite is true. There's so many people, once they get together and talk about it, they go, oh, yeah, that's me. So
all three of you work with adolescents. What are they telling you about their levels of anxiety and some of the causes, Fiona?
So what's interesting is, it's as you said at the beginning, it's definitely on the rise. You know, sometimes we'll talk to teachers and they'll say, you know, the child that's walking into our classroom these days is not the same one that was here 30 years ago. And I think it's just on, you know, it's on the increase. What we find is that oftentimes, you know, we have a stress response in our body that is triggered when we are worried about that there's danger going on. The problem these days is we don't know what's real, what's a real threat versus not a real threat. And so a lot of us walk around, and teenagers for sure, and even younger kids, we work mostly in the middle school and the elementary schools, are walking around in a hyper anxious state a lot of the time. And so, you know, that's sort of what we've seen both in the classroom and also from teachers. The other piece is we've done some research and found that like there's like 40% of kids are having a hard time sleeping at night. And a lot of that is because of the ruminating, like the looping thoughts that's going on, which we were really surprised that it was that high.
I'm also wondering if electronic screen time is, you know, on the cell phones. I mean, these kids are sleeping, you know, that's also contributing
Absolutely.
To the lack of sleep.
Yeah.
Other thoughts?
Sure. So we've been working with high school students with substance use issues, and a lot of them started self-medicating social anxiety with substances. And we see, you know, a very difficult time that they're having now in terms of getting off substances because they haven't addressed the underlying anxiety and how they could have dealt with it with healthy coping mechanisms. So we've been working with recovery high school students and also hearing from school nurses that students are coming into their offices with anxiety, 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 and they have broken biofeedback machines to give them to deal with it. And there's nothing really, no resources out there in the schools for them.
Mm. Sheila, what are you hearing?
I'm finding in my own caseload, I've been working for the town of Harwich for 18 years in September, and just the increase that you're talking about, I've definitely seen in my own caseload. I think that electronics does play a huge part in it. I think better monitoring of that, not letting them have them at night, you know, sort of modulating them the way they would any behavior would be a good idea. But they also just, it's across the board. It's not like they get home necessarily and they feel okay. Mm-hmm. You know, they're still sort of worked up from whatever drama happened.
Yeah, and there's that increased pressure from social media. Like it used to be, we go home from school and school is over until tomorrow. And unless you maybe have a phone call, but this is like the social media thing is happening 24/7.
It is, right. Yeah. And especially the bullying or the exclusion and taunting stuff,
right.
Because I remember a kid asking me one time, were you bullied in middle school? I said, oh, yeah, I'm very tall and, you know, kind of awkward looking at that age. And she said, well, the difference between you and me is that when you got home, it stopped. Mm. And I was like, whoa, I never thought about that, you know.
Right.
So,
yeah. Is there any research that's helping us pinpoint causes of anxiety in adolescents and why the level is becoming more severe?
Well, so I read compelling research, especially the Pew Research Center, on the internet and cell phones. When phones came out, first adults had them, and then when kids had them, you know, you can just see on a graph, mm-hmm. The lines go equally up. I think also it's just they have a lot more packed into their day, it seems like, to me, than when I remember being in school. There was always a free period, and there seemed to be a lot less of a pressure on performance and testing and, you know, all that other stuff. So
our play wasn't structured either.
No. Yeah. I mean, there's some schools that don't even have recess anymore because they don't have enough staff to be outside. It's like, so they have to sit for 6.5 hours. Yeah. You know?
And it's kind of a double-edged sword here. You're talking about the cell phone use and seeing as kids get cell phones, that anxiety rising. But so you go, okay, so maybe I won't get my child a cell phone. But then you've got that your child's the only child in the class without a cell phone, and then they're left out. So
it's
such a fine line to figure out as a parent, you know, how to moderate that. Yeah,
I think there's also a parent anxiety that's escalating as well, and that's the kids are feeding off of that. You know, we're seeing a lot of parents that have addiction and substance use issues because they have things going on their lives, and the kids are feeling that as well.
So how about parents? I mean, so I'm sure perhaps unwittingly, how are they contributing to their child's anxiety?
I think that Stephanie touched on a really important thing, because I think that there's a lot of things that's trends that have been happening, like pay inequality, pay inequity. You know, a lot of people that have never been to the Cape see the Cape as one way. And we all know that there's, you know, all sorts of different socioeconomic sort of strata or whatever you want to call it. But and I think that it's enormously stressful. And I think that a lot of parents that I work with, at least, tend to sort of just mow straightforward and don't take care of themselves. Very often in my practice, a third of the people I'm seeing are parents, because when the parents are doing better, the kids are calmer, you know? So, and when you tell them that, you know, it's like you're sort of their rock and their foundation. And if you're nice and solid, they're not going to freak out as much, you know, they're not going to be as anxious. So
do you think parents are also contributing, maybe, you know, of course you want your child to succeed and you want them to have a great life, and sometimes you're maybe a little bit overprotective, maybe a little bit too, you got to get into that great college, you've got to, you know, play this particular sport or do this for your resume. Are we maybe pushing a little too hard sometimes?
Shaking my head, yeah, probably because, you know, when Commerce started, it started because my daughter was losing friends to suicide, a lot of it related to the opiate issue. And I remember it putting it in stark, you know, perspective that, you know what, if I needed to take care of myself, and if I could take myself, I could take care of my kid. And I remember that sense of, you know, that none of this is important right now, you know, but it took me having a crisis to get that it does. I don't care if you go to college. Like, I just need you to be okay. And you need to get that, you know what, this too shall pass. And I think, you know, it's interesting, this film that we're promoting there, you know, there is a focus on the parents, and there is a, you know, at one, just that oftentimes, and there's nothing wrong with it. And I think this is the whole destigmatizing piece, is we all walk around with some level of this anxiety.
Absolutely.
And if we pretend like we don't, what kind of role model are we being for our parents and for our children? And then what kind of strategies can we as adults begin to incorporate that we can then share with our children, right?
Right. So what are some of the strategies? What can we do differently?
I mean, I think a lot of it for me is just the awareness piece, like recognizing that, wow, I'm having this anxiety. And I think for adults, we've got this 24/7 news and all kinds of stuff going on, like maybe not watching the news all the time. Maybe for me, it was learning how to incorporate mindfulness into my life and learning. I still use it, you know, learning. I know that when I'm having, you know, cortisol is coursing through my body and my heart is racing and my hands are sweaty, that I can close my eyes and I can do you know, 7-11 breathing, which is what we teach the kids in the classroom. And then I know on a physiological level that everything is settling down. My parasympathetic nervous system is coming back on board again. And so I think it's learning about anxiety, mm-hmm. which is empowering. And as a parent, for sure, but like we have little third graders who recognize when they're triggered on the playground and mm-hmm. recognize what's going on and then have strategies. It's like they have a choice because they can pause and go, wow, my amygdala or my guard dog mm-hmm. is barking. And so my wise owl is, you know, and it's simple. Mm-hmm. And I think about myself and I think, you know, I was actually one of those anxious kids. And I think, wow, that would have been really helpful to know what was going on.
Well, you're saying it's simple, but it's because you're putting it in simpler terms. It's,
right.
It's, you know, that guard dog and that wise old owl. I mean, that's a great thing for a kid to be able to imagine.
Right.
You know, when you're talking about parts of the brain, maybe not so much.
Right. Well, and I think that's the benefit of, you know, what we do upstream, right? Like mm-hmm. it's not about, we actually do a lot more work with the little people with the idea that what would it look like if all those ninth graders actually had an idea that when they were being triggered, this is mm-hmm. what was going on and they knew what to do about it. Yeah, so, you know, how about we'll see.
And we're teaching in these healthy coping mechanisms for the teenagers, especially the ones that are subbing out now substances to sub in something that's really healthy, like yoga, like meditation. Mm-hmm. And for me in my own practice, I echo what Fiona shared there. It had to be a crisis before I could just slow down and stop being, okay, do you have your backpack? Do you have your, you know, your applications in, you know, being that kind of like pushing and going forward, just what you described before, Mindy. And for my own self-care, yoga has been incredibly helpful because it does teach that pause between stimulus and response. And that's basically what we're hoping to teach the young people that are struggling with substances, that when you feel that trigger, when you want to use, that anxiety comes up, pause, sub in. You can sub in all sorts of healthy things. Take a walk, pet your dog, call Sheila, do this, do that. So all sorts of mechanisms to just delay that knee-jerk response and to Fiona's point, nothing is more important than their health. Mm. Nothing is.
Yeah. So what are some of the signs a child is experiencing anxiety?
Well, often when they're very young, and I think Fiona can attest to this because my area of expertise is 11 and up, but what I've been told and what I've read in the research, and I know Fiona sees it, is it's very often things like stomach aches, mm-hmm. not wanting to come to school, mm-hmm. And then when they get to be adolescents, it's, believe it or not, a lot of irritability is what you're seeing. So parents will bring them to me saying they're not being very respectful. Then you find out that there's a lot of other stuff going on. Mm-hmm. And by the way, I just want to make the point, too, that that parents you know, the intention behind wanting to move forward is a loving and good one.
Of course.
It's all about it. They want it to be okay for their kids. Yeah. And I think sometimes it's easy to assume that if you pay attention to something that's a negative emotion, which I hate that, you know, mm-hmm. that it's classified that way, that it's going to feed it mm-hmm. somehow. And it's actually the opposite, mm-hmm. you know, because you're paying attention to it non-judgmentally with kindness, you know, mm-hmm. and just sort of observing that feeling inside you.
So. All right. So, Fiona, what are your thoughts on that as far as child signs of?
What Sheila was saying, what you'll hear from teachers is a lot of stomach, like going to the nurse, mm-hmm. you know, having behavioral issues in school. Right. You know, I had mentioned not sleeping at night, which you wouldn't know unless you asked, you know, mm-hmm. and that was research, you know, how many of you are having trouble sleeping, test anxiety, things like that. So, and I, you know, just to kind of, Sheila was talking about if you can't talk about it, and we mentioned it earlier, you know, we teach something, you know, if you name it to tame it, mm-hmm. right? So to be able to, if you can name that sensation I'm having in my body is anxiety, then there's something you can do about it rather than just having this general feeling of being out of control, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think of my daughter, the one who, you know, was why I started, she was constantly angry and annoyed. You know, mm-hmm. but if you dug deeper, it wasn't annoyed. She was having consistent panic and anxiety that was going on because her friends were like dying around her. You know, who wouldn't? That's like a healthy mm-hmm. response. But to help them to be able to identify what they're feeling. So, mm-hmm.
So what are the short and long term impacts on adolescents when chronic or severe mm-hmm. anxiety is not addressed?
I just want to point out the school refusal. There's a lot of that right now. They will refuse to go to school, and they're missing out in lots of academic settings. And the wait list to get into alternative learning programs in the high school is grown exponentially because a lot of kids can't sit through a regular class in high school. So I think, you know, that's one of the big problems that we're seeing.
And substance abuse and addiction, it's anxiety. I don't know if you've had Dr. Ruth Pote.
Oh, yes,
yeah,
we have.
She's just wonderful, but it's one of the top four risk factors for developing a substance abuse disorder. Much more than depression for some reason, probably because a lot of substances depress you more. But, you know, with anxiety, it tends to, in the short term, work well until it doesn't work anymore.
Well, also the anxiety is scary. It's a scary feeling,
yeah.
Right?
Oh,
so,
it's terrifying.
Yeah, you want to do something about it. So that makes sense to me that anxiety would be a big risk factor. Mm. So is there evidence that adolescents with substance use issues are also dealing with other behavioral issues along with anxiety? I mean, we're talking about anxiety and substance, but are there other issues that they are generally dealing with as well?
Yeah, it's usually like they call it a comorbid disorder.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I've seen a lot of post-traumatic stress disorder and substance abuse, and certainly anxiety disorder, certainly depression. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the other thing I think long-term they're going to miss out on, a lot of the kids that I'm treating that have anxiety are very avoidant of everything. Mm. So I have one kid right now who's just so amazing. You'd want to put him in your pocket and take him home. But I'm trying to get him to get out and do some things, you know, and he's just so anxious he can't even do that, even things he likes, you know. So it's tough.
And what does he tell you why?
He's just afraid of what people will think of him, you know. He's just so self-conscious. So, you know, maybe building a layer of confidence is going to help with that a little bit, and just also pushing him a little, you know, try one time for
one
5 minutes.
And we really see the anxiety and the comorbid other behaviors come out after they're off substances for a while. And so that's why it's really important. The program we're starting, the alternative peer group program, there's a counselor there right away to kind of address, you know, the underlying mental health challenges that they have, because the substances are really doing just what you said, Mindy. They're making them feel better that they can actually take the test this week.
Cope, yeah.
Yeah, I just need, and we did a youth summit last May, and they were saying, you know, I just need to smoke pot before my test. That's, you know, that's just what's going to calm me down. And yeah, it's not addictive. It's not a problem. And, you know, that's kind of what their mindset at a lot of them.
Mm. Mm. Social emotional learning should be an important part of adolescence, but many kids aren't getting those skills. So what are the emotional skills that help kids cope with stress? And can parents and educators increase children's emotional skills? I mean, is that something we can help them with?
Yeah. Mindfulness is
one. Yeah. Right. I mean, that's part of what we do. Upstream, it's really looking at teaching those skills. So, you know, part of it is mindfulness, and then the other didactic pieces, you know, being able to identify emotions and manage those emotions and name them and, you know, acknowledging there's this level of, you know, when children, a group of kids all recognize that it's just normal, this sensation that I'm having, this that I'm calling, you know, anger, or I'm calling anxiety, is something that actually everybody has as a human being. So that, you know, a lot of that feeling like there's something wrong with me sort of dissipates, right? So I think that's really important.
So in my mind, I'm thinking language is a big part of this. How we talk to kids means, you can make them feel like there's something wrong with them.
Right, exactly.
Right? When it's something we all have.
Right, yeah.
I was telling Stephanie on the drive up that even the most well-intentioned humans, including myself, before I got into this field, will say if somebody's angry, they'll say, don't you use that tone of voice with me. Or if they're sad, they say, oh, come on, don't cry.
Cheer up, yeah.
Yeah. And if they're scared, oh, you're scared of that? Come on, you know, toughen up. But nobody ever says, don't be happy.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's so certainly we just decided that those other emotions are not acceptable somehow, or that we just want to protect the kids from having them, but they're going to have them throughout their lifetime. And so learn how to manage the parts of those that they're, you know, interfering with your quality of life, maybe, or having you not sleep, you know, whatever it is, but it's okay to have them.
So let's turn around for a second. So you have a child and they're crying, they're sad. So rather than don't be sad, is it, I understand you're sad?
it's okay to be sad. Say, what's going on, you know? And when they say what it is, you go, wow, I'd be sad if that was happening too.
So acknowledging their feelings, basically.
Right, yeah. While cheering them up, maybe. I'm not saying you shouldn't try to get them to sit there for 4 hours talking about it, but you know what I mean.
But speaking with them.
Yeah, speaking with them. I'm just thinking, because, like, again, it goes back to the you shouldn't be sad, something wrong with me, I'm sad, or whatever the emotion is. Yeah.
Right, and leaving it up to them to try to fix it rather than, you know, we can talk about it. Just like in the movie. I mean, just talking to one person is kind of the key for the movie.
And so what about that? Sometimes, you know, we all have complicated relationships with our parents. Sometimes you can talk to one parent more than the other. And sometimes you feel, especially I would think with adolescents, neither of my parents understand me. Right. So finding that somebody, maybe it's an aunt, an uncle, a grandparent, finding that someone, Stephanie, you're saying that you can talk to is key, right?
Absolutely. And that's this alternative peer group is just that. So these are cool, you know, other kids who have used substances but are now in recovery and can help, you know, the younger ones, the younger peers, just get over that, you know, that hump and find that place that's really going to give them the same amount of fun. They can be knucklehead teenagers, but they don't need to have the substances there. And they can work on their anxiety, whatever their underlying issues are, together. And they'll always, you know, be there for each other.
And not be judged.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, that's a big one, being judged. But what about the stigma? So let's talk about being judged. The stigma around anxiety and other behavioral disorders.
It's been changing. I mean, when I was a young person and was in therapy, it was like, oh, that's for crazy people. And, you know, oh, do they give you medication? And now it's sort of like, well, my therapist is better than your therapist, you know, with the kids at least. Yeah. And I also talk a lot to parents, believe it or not, they're saying, I didn't know. I had no idea it was this bad for my kid. You know, I thought maybe she was just, it was hormones. Mm-hmm. And that does play a part. But, you know, that I didn't know, if I'd known it was this bad, I would have got her into counseling 2 years ago, you know, that kind of thing.
So what about that? As a parent, you notice that your child's struggling with whatever it may be. At what point do you say, okay, we need somebody to talk to, we need counseling? And is that a certain age? I mean, does age play into this, or is it just whatever problems they're having? How do you determine that, I guess, is the question.
The parents, you mean?
Yeah.
A lot of the time they get input from school. Like there's a guidance counselor or something that's also noticing it. But again, you're sort of looking for how many areas in their life is this really, you know, intruding on. Yeah. And if it's just school, that's enough too, just because if there's bright kids.
School's a big part of their life.
Love learning, you know, and it's interfering with that.
I think it's really hard for parents, though, to even accept that call from school, because it's, you get, as a parent, I can speak for me, that anxious feeling, that pit in my stomach when the school calls and there's, you know, Patrick skipped class. We're concerned about Katie, you know, and you're just, there's that wall that comes up of denial, first of all. You don't want something to be wrong with them.
Right.
So there's a lot of, you know, work that has to happen on the parent end to then reach out for your child.
Right.
Yeah, if they were limping around on one leg, you know, and, you know, and then it went away and it came back and it went away and it came back, they'd take them to an orthopedist like that, you know, and that's the stigma part that needs to change, still work
more so from our generation than for the kids.
Absolutely.
And what about, you know, you're talking about peers, helping peers, but I'm thinking about, you know, the little kids, Fiona, the kids you work with, they're so much more accepting and understanding. And I'm not sure that gets to that age where something kind of changes.
Right. Middle school is that one.
And so, you know, you can see it being helpful when they're really little, because whatever they do, they're just so accepting and loving of everything. Mm-hmm. What can we do when that shift happens? How do peers help peers, or do they?
I mean, I think it depends. I know that, you know, Joanne Sykes, who now works at Morris Pond, has, you know, I don't know if she calls it lunch bunch. I think she might actually, where they actually, you know, these might be the kids who've been identified as having challenges and they get together. And I know for sure, you know, Greta McHugh over at Quashnet with the sixth graders, you know, they do gather them together. But I think what's interesting for us is a lot of the kids that are at Quashnet and also now at Morris Pond have had multiple years of this mindfulness-based SEL program, which is called Karma Choice. And so there is this level of to name it, to tame it, that there isn't as much stigma around it. I'm not sure about, there are some districts that don't have it, and maybe, I'm not saying that it's not a magic wand for sure, but I know that being able to identify what's going on with these kids, it becomes less of a, like the stigma goes away. Yeah. We don't just pull the bad kids out of class and the ones who are having trouble out of class. It's the entire class that gets the problem.
Well, you're also bringing up a point that's already been said, is talking about it and listening. I mean, that's really the key, isn't it? Being able, whoever it is, being able to talk about it and have somebody listen to you and acknowledge what you're going through. So I'm assuming that anxiety is treated with medication in some cases.
I think older teenagers and adults tend to want that more, or try it as an option and see if it makes any difference. But whenever I'm working with a kid that is on medication, their end goal is always to be able to learn enough skills in counseling so that the medication won't be necessary.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. So tell us about the film Angst and the panel discussion to follow.
So there's going to be two showings. As you said, there's going to be one in Harwich on the 12th and one in Falmouth. And the one in Harwich is actually at the Monomoy High School. Mm-hmm. The one in Falmouth is the Morris Pond School, but it's open to the public. Mm-hmm. It's not just for the school. The movie itself is 58 minutes long, so we'll have the movie first. And then afterwards, there'll be a panel, primarily because questions are going to come up from parents. And there's going to be, you know, older children there or teenagers there for sure. So Sheila will be sitting on the panel along with Dr. McGuire, who's a psychiatrist. I'll be on the panel. And we actually have a young woman from Plymouth who's in recovery, mm-hmm. who had issues with anxiety and depression prior and self-medicated and has now come off of medication. And then somebody from Stephanie's program as well will be there.
All right. And so it sounds like this would be a beneficial film to be screened in schools. Do we know if there are any districts planning to do that?
Yeah. Monomoy School District is going to screen it actually this Monday and Tuesday. They're splitting it up. They have this period in the middle of the day called Joss America's the Sharks is the mascot. Get it, Joss? And they have lunch, and then they can go to some activity in the building. So we're showing it over 2 days. And then we're going to offer during Joss Hour for 2 weeks after. I'm going to be there to just talk to kids, talk about brain science, talk to them about what stresses them out. Yeah. And so that's going to be in the middle of the day, and I'm looking forward to seeing what their reaction can be.
And then Dennis Yarmouth is also going. I've been talking to Toni Morrison about bringing it to DY. Yeah. We don't have a date for that. And actually, interestingly, the college is also interested in showing it. So we're hoping to have, these are the first two, but it's available to other schools. So hopefully that it's beginning to already, you know, kind of take shape.
Right. And Sheila, do you find that that this is, kids are, we mentioned kind of there's less stigma. So are you finding that more kids are recognizing this anxiety in themselves and sort of seeking that out, seeking out to talk to somebody about it or talk about it? You know, where kids, it's like, oh, I'm the only one who has this. And
they're telling their parents, I have anxiety, I need to see a counselor.
Oh, that's good. Yeah. And you talked about the brain science, which is fascinating.
I know.
And I would think that the kids would find that really interesting.
I think it's really cool. Because
who doesn't think brain science is cool?
You have them do something like that's an activity that's about focusing on other things, and they just, so where's your level right now? And it's gone way down. And they're like, whoa, you know, they think that's so cool. So,
Any final thoughts?
Just really grateful for this opportunity to talk about it. I think it's really for all of us, you know, we're working on it from different angles, but it is such an important conversation to have so that we can recognize that, you know what, we all have some level of it and that it's really okay.
Yep. So there will be two screenings, as we mentioned, of the movie Angst, Raising Awareness Around Anxiety, April 5th, 6:30 p.m. in Falmouth. Morris Pond, another one, April 12th at 6:30 in Harwich. At both venues, the film will be followed by a panel discussion featuring experts in the mental health field, as well as those with firsthand experience of anxiety. We'll have details about the screenings and information about the supports and services for teens with anxiety and substance use issues at our website, capeandislands.org. Sheila House from Harwich Youth and Family Services, Fiona Jensen from Calmer Choice, and Stephanie Briotti from Behavioral Health Innovators. Thanks so much for being here.
Thanks
Thank you.
Thank you, Mindy.
I'm Mindy Todd. Thanks for listening.